settled under his glorious heavenly teaching. After the meeting, friends passed away in peace, greatly refreshed with the presence of the Lord, and filled with joy and gladness that the Lord's power had given them such dominion. Many of the militia soldiers stayed also, much vexed that the captain and troopers had not broken up our meeting, and cursed the captain and his troopers. It was reported that they intended evil against us that day, but the troopers, instead of assisting them, were rather assistant to us, in not joining them as they expected, but preventing them from doing the mischief they designed. This captain was a desperate man, for it was he that said to me in Scotland that he would obey his superior's commands. If it were to crucify Christ, he would do it, or would execute the great Turk's commands against the Christians, if he were under him. So that it was an eminent power of the Lord which chained both him and his troopers, and those envious militia soldiers also who went away, not having power to hurt any of us, nor to break up our meeting. Next day we had an heavenly meeting at Wormsworth of friends in the ministry, with several others, and then friends parted. As they passed through the country, several were taken up, for on the day on which our first meeting was held, Lambert was routed, and it made great confusion in the country. But friends were not kept long in prison at that time. As I went to this meeting, there came to me several at Skegby in Nottinghamshire who were going to be soldiers under Lambert and would have bought my horse of me. Because I would not sell him, they were in a great rage against me, using many threatening words. But I told them that God would confound and scatter them, and within 2 or 3 days after, they were scattered indeed. From Wormsworth I passed in the Lord's power to Barton Abbey, where I had a great meeting. Thence to Thomas Taylor's, and so on to Skipton, where was a general meeting of men friends out of many counties concerning the affairs of the church. Footnote 155. This meeting for the affairs of the church, held in Skipton in Yorkshire in 1659, is generally considered to be the original yearly meeting. A friend went naked through the town declaring truth, and was much beaten. Naked means naked to the waist. There are a few other instances of similar actions in England and America. Some other friends also came to me, all bloody. As I walked in the street, a desperate fellow had an intent to do me mischief, but he was prevented, and our meeting was quiet. To this meeting came many friends out of most parts of the nation, for it was about business relating to the church, both in this nation and beyond the seas. Several years before, when I was in the North, I was moved to recommend to friends the setting up of this meeting for that service. For many friends had suffered in diverse parts of the nation. Their goods were taken from them contrary to law, and they understood not how to help themselves or where to seek redress. Footnote 157. This is the beginning of what was later known as the Meeting of Sufferings, which has been throughout its history a remarkable body. The minutes of the Meeting of Sufferings date from 5th month, 22nd, 1675. But after this meeting was set up, several friends who had been magistrates and others that understood something of the law came thither and were able to inform friends and to assist them in gathering up the sufferings, that they might be laid before the justices, judges, or parliament. This meeting had stood several years, and divers justices and captains had come to break it up. But when they understood the business friends met about, and saw their books and accounts of collections for relief of the poor, how we took care one county to help another, and to help our friends beyond the seas, and provide for our poor, that none of them should be chargeable to their parishes, etc., the justices and officers confessed we did their work and passed away peaceably and lovingly, commending friends' practice. Sometimes there would come 200 of the poor of other people and wait there till the meeting was done, for all the country knew we met about the poor. And after the meeting, friends would send to the bakers for bread and give every one of these poor people a loaf. How many soever there were of them, for we were taught to do good unto all, though especially to the household of faith. After this meeting, I visited friends in their meetings till I came to Lancaster, whence I went to Robert Witter's, and so on to Arnside, where I had a general meeting for all the friends in Westmoreland, Cumberland, and Lancashire. It was quiet and peaceable, and the living presence of the Lord was amongst us. I went back with Robert Witter's, and friends all passed away, fresh in the life and power of Christ, in which they had dominion, being settled upon him, the heavenly rock and foundation. I went next day to Swarthmore, Francis Howgill and Thomas Curtis being with me. I had not been long there before Henry Porter, a justice, sent a warrant by the chief constable and three petty constables to apprehend me. I had a sense of this beforehand, and being in the parlor with Richard Richardson and Margaret Fell, her servants came and told her there were some come to search the house for arms, and they went up into the chambers under that pretense. It came upon me to go out to them, and as I was going by some of them, I spoke to them, whereupon they asked me my name. I readily told them my name, and then they lay hold on me, saying that I was the man they looked for, and led me away to Ulverstone. They kept me all night at the constable's house and set a guard of 15 or 16 men to watch me, some of whom sat in the chimney for fear I should go up it. Such dark imaginations possessed them. They were very rude and uncivil and would neither suffer me to speak to friends nor suffer them to bring me necessaries, but with a violence thrust them out and kept a strong guard upon me. Very wicked and rude they were, and a great noise they made about me. One of the constables, whose name was Ashburnham, said he did not think 1,000 men could have taken me. Another of the constables, whose name was Mount, a very wicked man, said he would have served Judge Fell himself so, if he had been alive, and he had had a warrant for him. Next morning about 6, I was putting on my boots and spurs to go with them before some justice, but they pulled off my spurs, took my knife out of my pocket, and hurried me away through the town with a party of horse and abundance of people, not suffering me to stay till my own horse came down. When I had gone about a quarter of a mile with them, some friends, with Margaret Fell and her children, came towards me, and then a great party of horse gathered about me in a mad rage and fury, crying out, "Will they rescue him? Will they rescue him?" Thereupon I said unto them, "Here is my hair, here is my back, here are my cheeks. Strike on." With these words their heat was a little assuaged. Then they brought a little horse, and two of them took up one of my legs and put my foot in the stirrup, and two or three lifting over my other leg set me upon it behind the saddle, and so led the horse by the halter, but I had nothing to hold by. When they were come some distance out of the town, they beat the little horse and made him kick and gallop. Thereupon I slipped off him. I told them they should not abuse the creature. They were much enraged at my getting off, and took me by the legs and feet, and set me upon the same horse, behind the saddle again, and so led it about 2 miles till it came to a great water called the Carter Ford. By this time my own horse was come to us, and the water being deep, and their little horse scarcely able to carry me through, they let me get upon my own, through the persuasion of some of their own company, leading him through the water. One wicked fellow kneeled down, and lifting up his hands, blessed God that I was taken. When I was come over the sands, I told them that I heard I had liberty to choose what justice I would go before. But Mount and the other constables cried, "No, you shall not." Then they led me to Lancaster, about 14 miles, and a great triumph they thought to have had. But as they led me, I was moved to sing praises to the Lord, in his power triumphing over all. When I was come to Lancaster, the spirits of the people being mightily up, I stood and looked earnestly upon them and cried, Look at his eyes. Footnote 158. This is the second time the striking character of his eyes has been commented on. After a while I spoke to them, and they were pretty sober. Then came a young man who took me to his house, and after a little time the officers took me to the house of Major Porter, the justice who had sent the warrant against me, and who had several others with him. When I came in, I said, Peace be amongst you. Porter asked me why I came into the country at that troublesome time. Footnote 159. This was just at the troublesome time when Charles II was coming to the throne and the kingdom was being reorganized. Every traveler was suspected, and every gathering of people was watched. I told him to visit my brethren. But, said he, you have great meetings up and down. I told him that though we had, our meetings were known throughout the nation to be peaceable, and we were a peaceable people. He said that we saw the devil in people's faces. I told him that if I saw a drunkard or a swearer or a peevish, heady man, I could not say I saw the Spirit of God in him. And I asked him if he could see the Spirit of God. He said we cried against their ministers. I told him that while we were as Saul, sitting under the priests and running up and down with their packets of letters, we were never called pestilent fellows nor makers of sects. But when we were come to exercise our consciences toward God and man, we were called pestilent fellows as Paul was. He said we could express ourselves well enough, and he would not dispute with me, but he would restrain me. I desired to know for what, and by whose orders he had sent his warrant for me. And I complained to him of the abuse of the constables and other officers after they had taken me, and in their bringing me thither. He would not take notice of that, but told me he had an order, but would not let me see it, for he would not reveal the ring's secrets. And besides, a prisoner, he said, is not to see for what he is committed. I told him that was not the reason, for how, then, should he make his defense? I said I ought to have a copy of it. But he said there was a judge once that fined one for letting a prisoner have a copy of his mittimus. And, said he, I have an old clerk, though I am a young justice. Then he called to his clerk, saying, Is it not ready yet? Bring it, meaning the mittimus. But it not being ready, he told me I was a disturber of the nation. I told him I had been a blessing to the nation, in and through the Lord's power and truth, and that the Spirit of God in all consciences would answer it. Then he charged me as an enemy to the king, that I endeavored to raise a new war, and imbrue the nation in blood again. I told him I had never learned the postures of war, but was clear and innocent as a child concerning those things, and therefore was bold. Then came the clerk with the mittimus, and the jailer was sent for and commanded to take me, put me into the dark house, and let none come at me, but to keep me there close prisoner, till I should be delivered by the king or parliament. Then the justice asked the constables where my horse was. For I hear, said he hath a good horse. Have ye brought his horse? I told him where my horse was, but he did not meddle with him. As they had me to the jail, the constable gave me my knife again, and then asked me to give it to him. I told him nay, he had not been so civil to me. So they put me into the jail, and the under jailer, one Hardy, a very wicked man, was exceeding rude and cruel, and many times would not let me have meat brought in, but as I could get it under the door. Many came to look at me, some in a rage, and very uncivil and rude. Being now a close prisoner in the common jail at Lancaster, I desired Thomas Cummins and Thomas Green to go to the jailer, and desire of him a copy of my mittimus, that I might know what I stood committed for. They went, and the jailer answered that he could not give a copy of it, for another had been fined for so doing. but he gave them liberty to read it over. To the best of their remembrance, the matters therein charged against me were that I was a person generally suspected to be a common disturber of the peace of the nation, an enemy to the king, and a chief upholder of the Quaker sect, and that, together with others of my frantic opinion, I had of late endeavored to raise insurrections in these parts of the country and to embroil the whole kingdom in blood. Wherefore the jailer was commanded to keep me in safe custody until I should be released by order of the king and parliament. When I had thus got the heads of the charge contained in the mitimus, I wrote a plain answer in vindication of my innocency in each particular, as follows. I am a prisoner at Lancaster, committed by Justice Porter. A copy of the mitimus I cannot get, but such expressions I am told are in it as are very untrue. As that I am generally suspected to be a common disturber of the nation's peace, an enemy to the king, and that I with others endeavor to raise insurrections to embroil the nation in blood, all of which is utterly false, and I do, in every part thereof, deny it. For I am not a person generally suspected to be a disturber of the nation's peace, nor have I given any cause for such suspicion. For through the nation I have been tried for these things formerly. In the days of Oliver I was taken up on pretense of raising arms against him, which was also false. For I meddled not with raising arms at all. Yet I was then carried up a prisoner to London and brought before him. When I cleared myself and denied the drawing of a carnal weapon against him, or any man upon the earth, for my weapons are spiritual, which take away the occasion of war and lead into peace. Upon my declaring this to Oliver, I was set at liberty by him. After this I was taken and sent to prison by Major Seely in Cornwall, who, when I was brought before the judge, informed against me that I took him aside and told him that I could raise 40,000 men in an hour's time to involve the nation in blood and bring in King Charles. This also was utterly false, and a lie of his own inventing, as was then proved upon him, for I never spoke any such word to him. I never was found in any plot. I never took any engagement or oath, nor have I ever learned war postures. As those were false charges against me then, so are these now which come from Major Porter, who was lately appointed to be justice, but formerly wanted power to exercise his cruelty against us, which is but the wickedness of the old enemy. The peace of the nation I am not a disturber of, nor ever was, but I seek the peace of it, and of all men, and stand for all nations' peace, and all men's peace upon the earth, and wish all knew my innocency in these things. And whereas Major Porter saith I am an enemy to the king, this is false. For my love is to him and to all men, even though they be enemies to God, to themselves and to me. And I can say it is of the Lord that the king is come in to bring down many unrighteously set up, of which I had a sight 3 years before he came in. It is much Major Porter should say, I am an enemy to the king, for I have no reason so to be, he having done nothing against me. But I have been often imprisoned and persecuted these 11 or 12 years by those that have been both against the king and his father, even the party by whom Porter was made a major, and for whom he bore arms, but not by them that were for the king. I was never an enemy to the king, nor to any man's person upon the earth. I am in the love that fulfills the law, which thinks no evil, but loves even enemies, and would have the king saved, and come to the knowledge of the truth,